listening to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. If you could only be watching the Bryant Park Project from NPR News, there is much dancing going on in the studio, which can only mean two things. One, everybody's got their groove on because they think it's going to be a long weekend. Oh, yep, Dan's raising the roof. And it could also mean it's time for the most. Take a look at the most emailed, most viewed, and most commented stories across the web. Angela Ellis in the studio. Hi, Angela.
Hello.
Where's your most from?
I have the number 5 most emailed story from the UK newspaper, The Guardian. And this one's for all the Da Vinci Code fans out there. Apparently, this week an ad ran in the Daily Telegraph, another UK paper, seemingly put out by the Ancient and Noble Order of the Knights Templar. Now, if you need a Da Vinci Code refresher, they're the secret order of warrior monks charged with defending Jerusalem during the Crusades. And the legend says that after they were wiped out in the 14th century, they went underground. They have secrets like Mary Magdalene's love child, Jesus, and controversial things like that. So this ad says that they're alive and well, and that they want the Pope to formally restore the Knights Templar. The ad also calls on Knights Templar around the world to give a shout-out and go to their website, www.theknightstemplar.info.
Yes, I am one. I'm taking this occasion.
Producer Ian Schlag is now director Ian Schlag for the day.
I am Jacob for the day.
In the control room, going back to his roots for his most.
Yeah, my old Philly, old school roots. This is from Action News, a most viewed from the local hit TV news there. Headline, did sausage sandwich fix prevent I-95 collapse? Now, we've been following on the show that I-95, kind of the main thoroughfare from north to south there in Philly, has been shut down. They found a structural problem and have been fixing it. It just opened again this morning after several delays. So this story, actually, a structural engineer had a hankering for a hot sausage sandwich on his lunch break on Monday. So he goes to Port Richmond, where there is a lot of hot sausage, I can tell you.
Okay.
And he and his friend got a couple hot sausage sandwiches. They were sitting in their car eating them. He was enjoying it. He looks out his window, and they were parked next to a column supporting I-95, and he noticed some cracks. And being a structural engineer, he immediately called PennDOT, the transportation authority there, says, we have a problem.
He said, hot sausage, we got an issue.
Yeah, and so that led to the investigation and,
possibly prevented a major disaster.
If not for the hot sausage sandwich, how many lives would have been lost?
Not the first time, by the way, that a hot sausage sandwich would save some lives.
I'm telling you, just another reason.
You're going to have to back that statement.
I know,
up.
Really.
Another My life has been saved by hot sausage more than once.
There you go. There's your evidence.
Hey now.
Ian now. Dan, hi.
Hey, how are you? We got a most emailed here from Yahoo News, virtual massage for phantom limb pain. Now, you guys have heard of phantom limb pain with an amputee.
Sure.
They feel pain in a limb they don't have. Well, there's some interesting research by this doctor who's worked with some U.S. combat veterans. And basically, we have these mirror brain cells, which fire when you see certain hand gestures, let's see. But he theorized, like a thumbs up, let's say, can make you feel happy. All right. But when you actually have the physical experience of that hand gesture, of shaking someone's hand, for instance, then the mirror brain cells are not activated because sort of the actual experience overrides
mm-hmm.
the theoretical experience. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Kind of. But go ahead.
With amputees, what he found is that when they are if you have a cramp, let's say, in your phantom hand, if they watch someone else massage their own hands,
then they feel the massage with
right.
the mirror
it
cells.
It makes the pain go away in the amputee's
wow.
hand.
The mirror cells activate.
The mirror cells
that's really
activate.
Interesting.
Totally interesting.
Yes, and it's kind of mind-bending, really, to think. But it's basically like you could be at the bar with your buddy who just got back from Iraq who lost a limb, and his phantom ankle could be hurting, and if you massage
rub
your ankle.
Your own ankle, he'll feel better.
He'll feel better. You can help him out.
That's
well,
amazing.
Wow.
One person actually had pain go away for 15 minutes just by watching someone else massage their own hands.
Caitlin, you're up next.
All right. I also have a most emailed from Yahoo. And for fans of the book series, Anne of Green Gables, for the 100th anniversary, Penguin Books has commissioned a new author, because obviously the original author, Ellen Montgomery, has passed away. Budge Wilson of Nova Scotia is going to write a prequel to the series. And basically, she's going to tell the story of what happened to Anne Shirley before she was adopted by Marilla and Matthew Cupp, expert. This is very exciting news. I love these books as a kid.
I'm not excited.
Always watch Avonlea. You're not excited?
I'm really torn about this.
Well, some people are, and some of the critics are saying, you know, how can you have this character written by two different authors, and they're worried that it won't, you know, retain the same.
There's so many Anne of Green Gables books. I like to read them over and over again. I'm totally outing myself, but... You know,
they are
great. Read the original. I don't know. Maybe it'll be
great. But it's carrying on the tradition, introducing the books to a whole new generation. Think about it that way.
I just hope these new books aren't going to have Jar Jar Binks.
Book fight. Okay, Trisha, you're up next.
All right, I'll be real quick. I'm your Google girl, and this morning when we woke up, among the top 10 Google trends were the name Darlene Rodriguez, who...
It's a tough story.
Yeah, it's a tough one. She's actually a local NBC News anchor
here
in New York City. And why are they searching her name? Because the story isn't actually about her. Her husband, who's a police sergeant in a nearby area... has actually been accused of raping a 17-year-old girl. He was charged with that crime yesterday, and people, I guess, are typing in her name because he's married to a famous woman. Anyway, he, of course, is pleading not guilty. She is saying she believes in him 100%, that he's innocent, so we'll see how that all plays out.
All right. Trisha McKinney, thank you for the most. Caitlin Kenny, Angela Thanks. Ellis. I do have one more most for you, dear listener. This is one of the most emailed at NPR.org. It's an interview with Dee Dee Myers, who is press secretary under Bill Clinton. She has a new book out entitled Why Women Should Rule the World. You might assume it's a book about why Hillary Clinton should be in the White House, but it's not. Myers is neutral in this presidential race. NPR's Michelle Norris spoke with Myers and asked her the central question of the book. Would the world really change if more women called the shots? Here's what Dee Dee Myers had to say.
And as I thought about it, I thought, well, what would really change things? And as I looked around, I said, is there anybody that's really sort of doing what I'm sort of advocating, which is trying to come together around solutions? And one of the places I found that I thought it was happening that was very interesting was among the women in the United States Senate. At the time, there were 14. And, you know, these women have very little in common on paper. They come from left and right coasts, you know, big states and small states. They're liberal, conservative, and sort of moderate. Some are married with children, others not. But they work hard to find excuses to work together. They look for common ground in the areas where it might exist, and they're friends. So I said, well, that's the solution, right? Maybe if there were more women, we would have a more collaborative political culture. And so I said, okay, that's what I'm going to write, a book called Why Women Should Rule the World. This is about 3 years ago. And then I said to myself, oh, no, can I actually prove that? And I set out to find out. And I think my research did shockingly support my thesis, which is that more women would, in fact, make the world better.
One of the things that I found interesting in the book, you cite all kinds of studies that suggest that women face real obstacles to taking on positions of leadership, particularly in academia, but also in politics and in the corporate world. But in some cases, they also hold themselves back, either because they choose to spend more time with their family, they choose jobs with more flexible hours, or they're in some ways adverse to risk. And I can actually hear this argument. If that's the case, if women aren't pushing themselves toward these leadership positions, then why should they rule the world?
Well, I think that women make different choices, and I think that we should respect that and allow for that. But I mean, you know what I mean by rules, that women's talents should be front and center and value everybody as much as men's and be allowed to make those kinds of choices. And I do think there's reasons that women hold themselves back, but I think sometimes the obstacles are a combo of external and internal. For example, one study was a Harvard Business Review article from about a decade ago where Deloitte Touche, the big consulting firm, the president of that company, a man, God bless him, said, you know, why is it that we hire the same number of men and women out of college and 10 years later, so many of the women are gone? And the answer he got from his staff was, well, they're leaving to have children. He said, I don't buy it. Let's go back and talk to them. So they did. And they found that a lot of women did leave to be with their families, but many, many more left because they felt they lacked opportunity. They felt like the big clients, the big accounts that were instrumental to really being promoted were never given to them. And the bosses would say things like, well, that requires too much travel, or it's an automotive account, she wouldn't be interested, or the, you know, the head guy's an SOB and, you know, she wouldn't want to deal with him. They never asked the women. And so a lot of women were leaving and saying, it's one thing to bust your hump when you have a chance to make it to the top, and it's another thing when you're stuck in the middle.
Now, Dee Dee, the title of this book is Why Women Should Rule the World. There are a number of voters out there that are now asking themselves, should a woman actually run the White House? You worked for the Clintons, but you tread lightly in the book when it comes to Hillary Clinton. You mention her, but you don't talk a lot about her experience in the White House. She's actually barely mentioned in the book, and I just want to quote you say, what would the White House be like if Hillary were president, if her power were rooted not in her marriage, but in the Constitution. Time will tell. Time will tell. That's an easy way out.
Yeah, because I don't claim to have a crystal ball. I do say that I think her years in the Senate might be instructive because she has seemed in her Senate career to wear power more lightly, I think is how I described it. She's worked really hard to learn the ways of the Senate. She's made common cause with people both in the Democratic Party and in the Republican Party who don't necessarily always agree with her. She's even reached across the aisle and worked with the former impeachment managers from the House, among them Lindsey Graham. And I think that says a lot about what Hillary Clinton might be like as a leader when she's free to be her own person and is not half of the Bill and Hillary team. And I don't mean to skate over it. I just don't think there's any way we can know. But I do think there's clues in her past.
What are those clues?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, there's both good and bad. I think what we saw in the healthcare process early on was somebody who was incredibly attuned to details, worked her heart out, but was in ways too secretive. I think she shed light on issues. She focused attention on issues like early childhood education and diversity in the workplace that were, I think, important and that her mere presence was able to help highlight. She was taken very seriously, as you know. When the First Lady spoke, people listened. And I think she was able to do some really good things. She also happens to sit on the fault line of a lot of cultural issues in this country. And so she's controversial, and there's no escaping that. And I don't think all of her problems are related to gender, but some of them I think are.
That's currently the number 8 most emailed story at NPR.org, a conversation with former White House Press Secretary Dee Dee Myers with NPR's Michelle Norris. We'll link to that interview and all of our mosts on our website, npr.org/Bryant Park.